It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Mac World Editor-in-Chief Jason Snell joins Andy Iannocco and me to talk about the Super Bowl ads. Where was Apple's Super Bowl ad? The big money in iPhones and even bigger money in keeping you locked in. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 285, recorded February 7th, 2012. Samsung. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Go to My PC. Take care of last-minute requests from anywhere, right from your iPhone, with GoToMyPC for the iPhone. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the promo code MACBREAK. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your used electronic gadgets from your home or office. Don't just sell it. Gazelle it. Gazelle your used gadgets today at Gazelle.com. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, because we do it every week. And it's, once again, time to gather the group together to talk about the latest news. From Cupertino, to my left, Mr. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. He's got the Action League in full battle.
Excuse me, those are the warring factors of the Avengers during the Marvel Civil War Maxi event.
No idea. Was I completely wrong? Is there not Justice League involved in there anywhere?
No. See, SDC? You got your Captain America, yeah. You got your Tigra, you got your man, comma, spider.
Oh, it looks
you
Spider-Man.
You got your cloak, there you got your dagger. I think I've made my point.
Okay.
There you go.
Such not a comic nerd.
And Iron Man.
And Iron Man.
If not the Iron Man.
And Iron Man. Also with us from the wonderful Macworld magazine, the last paper publication still standing in the entire world. It's great to have you, Mr. Jason Snell.
It's great to be here.
I ask you this every time. Any chance? I mean, you're going to stay paper for a while.
Yeah, it's...
People have to read something in the bathroom.
And at the airport, right?
And at the airport.
It's funny, the newsstand actually is doing pretty well, and I guess putting Apple products on the cover has a lot to do with that, but it's actually very successful.
Yeah, that's true, I guess, since Apple is so hugely successful.
Right.
I mean, if you were covering PCs, you probably wouldn't really have much...
I mean, Macworld's PC story magazine. Is better than PC World.
Right.
I mean,
PC World is which IDG, right?
And Macworld does better, I think, because the Apple products are just more successful. But, you know, everybody knows the future is the web, but the magazines are doing okay.
And Mac fans will, you know, clearly step up.
Yeah, and there are lots of iPhone and iPad users out there, too. So we'll see, an iPhone on the cover of a magazine.
Speaking of which... I love Super Bowl advertising, and I immediately realized that I am no longer a fanboy, and I bought a Samsung Note because of that ad. Because of that ad. Because it's so honking big.
Did you also buy one of those gold bustiers that Madonna was wearing during the halftime show?
I did. And from now on, when I come on stage, I'm going to have oiled up muscle men pull my sled. Into the arena.
I think you're going to have an oiled up sheet of glass because of that big stupid thing you keep pressed against your face.
It's oleophobic. Weren't we talking about oleophobic?
Unless you switch to a different moisturizer.
I think it's the same glass that Apple uses, even though they don't say so. Hey.
It's just more of it.
Hey, are you guys hurt or laughing at the Samsung ads? That's why I bring this up. Super Bowl ad mocking. In fact, there's a whole series now mocking Apple fanboys waiting in line behind the metal barricades for the next big thing. And Samsung says the next big thing is already here. In this case, a phone with a stylus. Yeah, that's what we need.
I think it's very nice of them to spend so much money during Super Bowl primetime to explain that Apple has the hot products that everybody really, really wants, and that at best, this product they've spent so much time and effort designing can only be thought as a number two alternative to the device that people are actually lining up for.
Oh, come on. This is like their 1984. They're kicking over the barricades. They're free. They're dancing.
They're free. They're free and running to listen to the white version of Prince. I don't know why.
That was weird.
This is a really odd commercial.
It's a very strange commercial.
Well, because they've got a product here that's interesting because I don't know if there's a real use for a device that's somewhere in the middle of size between a phone and a tablet. I could be definitely convinced that there is one for that, but that's not the message that they're making. The message that we're making is you don't want to be like one of those iPhone losers, right. Those hip people you see on movies and television shows. You want to be a Samsung dude. Woo!
Initially, yeah, there's nobody really says I want to be a Samsung fanboy, but initially... I thought this might be so insulting. See that? They have a whole page and there's a whole series of ads. And I thought this initially, and by the way, I'm getting a t-shirt and I shouldn't say it, but I'm getting a t-shirt that says, dude, you're a barista, but, which is off from an earlier one. But at first I thought, oh, Apple fanboys would be upset. But I think what it really says is that the iPhone now is so mainstream that even iPhone users, you know, and people who love the iPhone can laugh at the fanboys because they're kind of marginalized now because everybody has an iPhone.
Well, or at least that's what.
So it doesn't hurt their. It's not like it's targeted against us.
Right. I mean, it would be stupid to say we're targeting. We want to make fun of the people who are our potential customers. Right. That would be dumb. I think they're. But it's interesting. I think it's a smart campaign. I think it's way better than the Droid campaign that's going on. So you
which
know,
I hate them, which, the monsters and the robots and the
We make our phones out of the dead bodies of robots that were killed by other robots.
That doesn't seem like a good.
And it's the Droid Max with two X's because two X's is better than Samsung said. I mean, it's funny and what is more satirable, I guess, than people waiting in line Hipsters. Overnight to buy. Yeah. A phone, and I don't think, you know, all iPhone users are not people who wait in line overnight.
Although I did.
But
6 hours for the first one. But I think that that's the point, is that we're a thin shell now, and that the vast majority of iPhone users are just normal people who might consider a ginormous phone. Like, you know what, I actually paid my own money for this, and I love it. But so here's another question. If you compare this to an iPhone, you put it next to an iPhone, and you see this is like looks tiny.
Lottery check.
Here's the question: is Apple going to eventually either get a bigger screen or be hobbled by the fact that they're 3.5 inches in a world of a 5.5 inch screens?
Do we really know what the right sizes for these devices are going to be? Apple obviously thinks that the 3.5 and the 10 are the right extremes here, but. There's room for experimentation, and these guys are doing it. Other companies are doing it, and we'll see. I mean, I've got a Kindle Fire at home. That's a 7-inch. It seems really weird. Like it's not big enough, and it's not small enough. But right. And this is on the other end of that. It's kind of interesting. I think it wouldn't surprise me if Apple has some different sizes at some point down the road. That, you know, like an iPod Touch that's bigger, sort of like the Galaxy Note. But I don't know. We'll just have to see. It adds some complication because of fragmentation.
Right.
The sizes are many and varied in Apple's platform. Okay, Andy, sorry I interrupted you.
I'm sorry. No, I was misselecting, jumping on points and sort of letting you talk. But it's really is fragmentation, but it's also probably one of the best advantages that Android has over iOS, that no matter what kind of phone you want, you can find it. So if you want something with a larger screen because you spend less time doing this and more time reading and playing games and stuff like that, that's a cool feature. So I'm not sure that Apple would want to do that, only because this is the only phone that they're going to make, pretty much. Yeah. And also, they're kind of limited to what their developers can support. And I think that they, inside Apple, I think that they see that the ability to get your entire thumb across the entire screen and use the iPhone one-handed is a user feature that they don't want to abandon. I get a whole bunch of different, pretty much every Android phone that's made for at least a couple of weeks. And it really is kind of clumsy when you, it's the difference between a 4.25-inch screen and even a 4.5-inch screen is the difference between being able to just take something out of my pocket, check Twitter, then put it back to sleep and put it in my pocket, and taking it out, having to take this other thing off, put my bag on my shoulder and having to tap to get to the entire acreage of the screen. So that's why it's good that there's this flexibility, but I'm sure that if you had to put most of your stock in this in one screen size, Apple would probably rather put it into something that's more portable.
Yeah, I mean, one man's fragmentation is another man's choice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just two sides of the same coin. I freely admit that the reason I like a ginormous phone is because I'm old. And it's easier for me to read the fine print, and it's a lot easier for me to type. So that, you know, I just for me, so, that go ahead.
So it seems like if they really want to go for the elder market, they should be sizing the phone so it's the same size as the Reader's Digest and the Prevention magazine.
It is. That's exactly what this is. This is exactly what this is.
It's like one of those, like those sci-fi magazines I read as a kid. It's a dot convenient digest size.
This? But now this is swipe, so it's not really the giant keyboard.
Well, I mean, to Android's point, did I call him Android?
Android.
So Android's point.
Little Android's point.
Young Android.
And if I go here and show the keyboard.
Apple wants to keep it simple. We all know your passcode now, Leo.
That's all right.
Apple wants to keep it simple because they don't want to ship 80 different versions of their products. They want to focus it, and they've got a small size and a big size. And I'm sure that if suddenly everybody wants a 7-inch tablet, Apple will say, well, maybe there's something there. But I'm sure that Apple's tested every single size and decided that these are the two sizes that reach the most people.
We know that because isn't that what they do in that lab? The secret lab that they wrote about where they have models of all different sizes, and Steve came in and he would heft and feel and everything like that. Somebody wrote, I thought this was interesting, that did give Apple a bias toward the physical. They were so successful at that it made, and this might be one explanation of why they keep stumbling a little bit with cloud and stuff like that. They're hardware company, very much so, and that kind of was in their DNA, but also was kind of in the nature of the way that they looked. They had to hold a product to feel. I mean, who's going to knock the fact that we have a choice? And you do have a choice. You just don't have a choice running iOS, but you still have a choice. And according to Apple, this is a complete ripoff of iOS anyway. So you even have a choice that way too. You know. So
according to Apple, the fact that it uses a stylus means it's a complete failure.
Well, that's the next question. Okay, so it does come with a pen, and one of the things, and I thought it was great when Steve introduced the iPhone. He said, "Styluses suck, and we're not going to make something with a stylus.
If you have to use a stylus, you failed." I think is what he said.
Yeah,
and of course, on the Galaxy Note, you don't have to use it.
So it's an additional feature, which I don't think is such a bad feature. They have. And I'll tell you, there is a market for it. We know because look at the size of the third-party market for pens on the iPhone and the tablet.
One of the most popular stories on Macworld.com week in and week out. One of our editors, Serenity Caldwell, has reviewed every single iPad stylus.
Yeah.
And those are wildly popular. People do like styluses for the iPad, especially artists. But some people like to take notes by hand. And it's a successful market, so it's not unreasonable.
It's quirky. I have a friend who got his first iPhone last year, upgrading from a flip phone that I don't even think it had a camera on it.
Yeah.
And he never uses it without a stylus because having a pen in his hand and tapping buttons with it is the most natural way to do it.
This is one of the things they tout. This is a use case that seems to me very limited, but if you press the button on the stylus and tap the screen, it does a screen capture. I said, if you press the button and you tap this, maybe you have to, I don't know, maybe it doesn't do anything. There it is. Oh, it does a screen capture. Oh, double tap makes a note. Sorry. Okay.
Welcome to Galaxy Note Weekly, by the way.
Yeah, really. Well, no, you're right. I probably shouldn't even talk about this because Apple people probably don't want to hear about it. But I just think that this is telling. This is what,
I think it's fascinating because it's something we haven't really seen before. And when you think of what Apple's choices have been, it's interesting to see the choices that Apple has made to not release products in certain categories, and whether the Galaxy Note is really interesting and different.
So I guess that's my question: does the Galaxy Note make iPhone users interested? Does it put pressure on the small screen of the iPhone? And as I started out with, do the Samsung ads? Do you find them insulting or successful or unsuccessful? And so
if you find the Samsung ads insulting, you've got problems in your personal
barista.
Life. You need to create a lifestyle in which you have more actual victories in your life so that you don't feel quite so put upon by outside sources.
Right.
I don't think it's an effective ad because the Note was one of the more interesting things that I was hoping to get my hands on as soon as it made its way to the US here.
Which it will February 19th on AT&T.
Right. And so hopefully I'll have one very shortly. Really interesting form factor, but I don't think it really sold that version of it. It didn't the commercial didn't bother to say, here's why you'd want to get out of this line and get into this line instead.
Right.
I should have brought my Newton. It's about the size of
it. I have a Newton in the other room. It is kind of almost Newton-esque, isn't it? And it has handwriting recognition, by the way.
Eat up, Martha.
I think it's all good. It means there's competition. And I just wonder if Apple will respond to stuff like that or just stay the course. And my suspicion is they'll stay the course.
Yeah.
They don't respond to anything.
My only guess would be that if Apple feels like there's room for another screen size, then they'll do it. It probably won't be because of the competition, but it's possible. Like, I mean, the thing I keep thinking is, you know, not that there's going to be a smaller iPad, but what if there's a bigger iPod Touch at some point? Something that's just a little bit roomier. But I don't know. Apple's doing pretty well with the products they've got, so they may be happy to keep it simple.
Well, of course, I keep waiting. I think this is the month that we expect to hear about a new iPad. Because if they're going to release...
Maybe next month.
They're going to release it. In March is when they always... But will they...
Well, beginning of April.
They broke that rule with the iPhone.
Yeah,
it could
sure.
break the rule. I mean, there's no... It's an unwritten rule. But I guess that it seems likely that if they do release a more expensive or a higher res, maybe it won't be more expensive, but they will offer a lower cost version of the iPad 2 still. You think that will happen?
I think that would be great. I think so. We've seen the model, right, with the iPhone.
Yeah, I really think that's how they're going to respond to all these really good 7-inch tablets that are coming out, not by producing a 7-inch tablet of their own, right. But by making it that much more difficult for someone to say, well, geez, why are you going to spend $500 on an iPad when all the core features you really want are available on this $250 tablet? Well, that becomes a different thing when it's a $399 iPad or even a $350 iPad.
Good game, though, the Super Bowl. Good game.
It was okay. It went well.
I enjoyed it. I'm not a Giants fan. I just
Tom Brady gets to leave with a supermodel at the end, so you know, boohoo for
exactly.
Him.
Well, who's he married to? Giselle.
Giselle Bundchen. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
Loser. Super Bowl loser.
As I said when it started to look kind of hopeless for the Patriots, at least our quarterback will still be much much more handsome than the Giants.
They're both good looking fellas. Now come on.
They're both good looking. One now has a Super Bowl ring along with the fame and the money. So.
So there's a analyst
pitchers and catches report in a week and a half. That's all I care about.
I know. Isn't that exciting?
At least like non-sports out of the way.
I just love that. Those who buy Apple products, says an analyst, keep analysts. They're always right. Aren't they? They're always right. Keep buying them and show few signs of stopping. This guy gets big bucks for this stuff. His name is Tony Sakonagi of Bernstein Research.
This was a good article. This is a good insight. He's trying to calculate up over the lifetime of
loyalty
of somebody who's going to buy Apple products, buy an iPhone every couple of years and an iPad and a new Mac every 3 years, how much money you end up spending in the Apple ecosystem, which, you know, I think it's a really good point that it's an ongoing money source for Apple.
Total lifetime customer value, $204 billion in revenue for Apple by the end of fiscal 2012, $373 by the end of fiscal 2014. Add the cash balance. I need a cash register sound. Ching, 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 ching. 2014, $548 billion. And that is, they say, conservative. Of course, the analysts do all this because they're... Is that a boat whistle? Wow.
It was a foghorn.
The fog is rolling in.
That's not even close.
Over the bang.
Sound like Jason had something bad for breakfast. But the point is actually a very good point, and it is the kind of calculation, for instance, phone companies and cable companies make, which is how much is a customer worth to us over the lifetime of the customer, and how much does churn cost us? Right. And churn is a big issue if you're a cable company. A churn is a customer who becomes a customer, usually at great expense because they have to pay for advertising and marketing, get this guy in the door or gal in the door. How much does it cost you when you lose? How many of your customers leave after a year, 2 years, 3 years? And the churn is a big deal in almost every market, apparently not in Apple's market.
This is why lock-in exists and why it benefits customers.
Exactly.
Benefits companies to lock in customers. So, you know,
customer acquisition is costly. It's same for Macworld Magazine.
Yeah,
it costs
sure.
you a certain amount of money to get a subscriber.
And you got to prorate that over how long they're probably likely to stay as a customer. Yeah. Yeah. And so with this, it's so true. Apple's ecosystem, I feel like, you know, iTunes Music doesn't have DRM anymore. You're not really locked in. You can buy Amazon MP3s. But the app thing is enormous, that so many people bought iPhone apps and then right. they bought iPad apps. And even if you would start to think about buying that Galaxy Note, one of the moments that has to make you pause is the realization that you have to rebuy all of your favorite apps because it's a different platform. And that's, you know, Apple's got a lot going for it with that kind of app lock-in.
I believe I have a sound if you'll turn me up. Thanks to our our chat room, Masa Media.
Oh.
That's not big enough. I need a huge $548 billion ka-ching.
Keep talking, and I'll give you something in just a second.
Pitch that one down a little bit.
It should have money cascading from the ceiling. Yes. It should have balloons. It should
have.
It's like a telephone.
Something. Hold on.
Eileen's working on it.
No, hold on. Okay.
It's not the app. Somebody's MacTech saying in the chat room, phone apps are not that expensive, but that's not the point.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, if the right device came along that fit into the way that I work better, there are not a whole lot of apps on my iPad right now where it would really be painful for me to buy or to replace them with something else. Most of the apps on the thing are $5. $10. The most expensive one, I think, is actually $30, and that's just the Sling Player app. So if it costs less than, let's say, $50 or $60 to replace the core apps that I really, really want, not over the lifetime of the product, all the stupid $1.99 games and 99-cent things that I just bought just to sort of mess around with them for a little while, I don't think that would be a hindrance. But it really comes down to Apple has me locked in because they keep having the best software, the best hardware, or more to the point, the stuff that works together and it enhances the way that I go about my personal life, my business life every day.
I don't know. I'm less likely. Oh, there we go.
I was just waiting for a pause.
Eileen Rivera, ladies and gentlemen.
Does that say something about the economy, that floating dollar signs are now made of? Was that like, was
yen.
That pewter?
It's yen.
Yeah, pewter. Exactly. Yeah. Pewter dollar
pewter
signs,
copper.
Not gold ones.
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
But there is, I mean, it's part of the lock-in. It's all of it. It's the hardware. It's the ease of use, the ecosystem. And it's also the fact you don't have, because you don't have DRM anymore, you don't have the lock-in with songs. But because you spent, you know, maybe a few $100 on apps, you're going to, at least there's a little resistance to change.
Right, and if you bought
and that happens with Windows.
For somebody switching to Mac,
people do switch.
It doesn't have to be a shackle. It just means the more inconvenient you make it, the more pause you give somebody, and they think, well, if I buy this tablet, I'm going to have to buy those apps, and if I want them on my phone too, I'm going to have to buy it separately.
Right.
But if it was an iPad and an iPhone, they'd work on both. And it may not be a lot of money, but it's part of that psychology, I think.
Here's the other thing that's kind of interesting. So he figured out how much, what the lifetime value per customer, per product is, based on retention rates, replacement time, and margin. And the number is interesting. So the iPhone is worth, because it's replaced every 2 years, $700 to $900 every 2 years. A Mac, replaced every 3 years, about $600 to $650. An iPad, replaced every 3 years, $275 to $300. So the iPhone is, by a factor of 50 to 100%, more valuable than any other product Apple sells.
And that's partly because we don't see the price of the iPhone because it's subsidized by the carrier. It's in your phone bill every month.
But that's I think that shows you, you know, I mocked Apple when they said, oh, we want to get in the phone business. I remember telling Scott Borden, there's no way Apple's going to get in the phone business. It's a horrible business. Like, why would they get in the TV business? Horrible business. And yet they've managed to make this the most successful, not only the most successful phone ever, but also a huge cash cow for the company, more than even any other product.
It's more than half their revenue. And didn't somebody calculate that it's more than, in the last quarter, there was more iPhone revenue than there was Microsoft revenue? Wow.
That is kind of amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a good quarter.
That's kind of saying something, isn't it? So kudos, props to Steve Jobs and whoever else said we got to do a phone, despite the fact that you just really don't want to get in this business with these carriers who are nightmares.
AT&T cracked, right?
They did. And they brought them to their knees.
Yeah.
And they still are broken as far as I'm concerned. One of the reasons I got this unlocked note so I could run it on T-Mobile is AT&T's network is terrible. You know, I was surprised when we went to New York. I thought, well, it'll be better than the Bay Area. No, it's 3G on AT&T is horrible in New York.
Oh. Well, New York specifically is such a sinkhole of non-connectivity.
Is there anything better? Is Verizon better?
No, it's New York is really just a torture chamber for getting cell coverage anywhere. Yeah. You're in the middle of down the street level in the steep canyons. It's so bad that I can tell you pretty much the exact Amtrak stop from Boston to New York, where I know that I got to make sure that I download. If I need a map to get somewhere, that's the stop by which I need to make sure that I'm connected and I download these maps or do screen captures, because I can't count on being on 33rd and 7th and still know how to get to a certain office from here if I'm trusting on Google Maps to get me there.
Well, it was a little bit of a revelation to me, I have to say. We all saw this picture of Steve Jobs as a youth. I think Andy Hertzfeld posted this on Google Plus, flipping off, flipping the bird.
It's like the Super Bowl halftime show now.
to the big blue. Well, guess who IBM just knocked off the list of major brands? Apple knocked IBM off the list of major brands. So, Steve, you did it. Maybe it took you 30, 40 years. Apple is the top brand of 2011, according to an annual list put together by Davis Brand Capital. IBM had come in first in 2009, 2010. Microsoft, Google, and HP, other tech companies on there. But Apple, number one for 2011. Apple, then IBM, Microsoft, Google, HP, General Electric, Procter & Gamble, Intel, Coke. See, we've seen other studies that said Coke was bigger.
What kind of list is this where IBM last year was the top brand? World are they living?
Who are these people? IBM, what's wrong with them?
Was this a poll taken at golf courses or and mixers in high society?
It evaluates companies' abilities to manage and balance the five key intangible categories that comprise brand capital, brand value, competitive performance, innovation strength, company culture, and social impact.
You see, if they put poison comportment on that list, I really think that Pepsi would have been higher on that list.
Pepsi does great in these swimsuits.
They have a very debutante-ish sort of way about them.
Up yours, IBM. I don't know. It's just an excuse for me to show that picture again. I just love that. I just love that picture of Jobs flipping the blade to big blue.
Well, but what do you think? What do you think the value is of that sort of thing?
Of doing
that? It's one thing. I mean, no. I mean, of
catharsis,
like,
Andy. It's catharsis. Yeah.
Oh no! I've been in Chicago and I've had pictures of myself taken near the Tribune Building that I probably don't want Andy Hertzfeld to get a hold of. But I mean, whenever it seems like, but this actual ranking, it seems like more of a metric that's of value to the sort of people who'd be offended by that Samsung ad, but right. Not really of value to, especially a company like Apple that doesn't really care how they're perceived. They only care about how people vote with their dollars.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, still. I love that.
And for the record, I was just scratching the side of my face. The fact that I was pointing at the Tribune Building while I was doing it, I was holding my iPhone. I was a finger. I was not giving the Tribune.
It's a pick. It wasn't a pick. It was a scratch. Amazon wants to get in the big store business. Now, see, as long as Leo's doing the mea culpa, I said Apple should not get into the iPhone business. I said Apple should not get in the TV business. We'll see if I was right or wrong about that. And I very, very clearly said, and I was, by the way, the Apple board supported me at the time, that Apple should not get into the retail business. Look what happened. Gateway had just folded its stores shortly before that. What a terrible idea. Now, of course, it's widely hailed as probably the smartest move of any American company in the last 100 years. But okay, you know, I didn't think they should get Intel either. I thought Intel was a mistake. So obviously, Apple's not listening to me.
Or they're just doing the opposite.
Oh, maybe they are listening.
You are their Costanza.
Do the opposite.
Leo hates
the idea. All right. Amazon is thinking about opening physical brick and mortar stores. Now, you know, I consider the source of this story is Jason Calacanis, but the New York Times Bits blog did, citing the Calacanis story, speculate the same thing. David Streitfeld, writing for the Times, said speculation has been around for quite some time. Did the magic that made the Apple Store so successful, can that brush off on a company like Amazon?
Apple's got hardware. I mean, that's the big difference. Is this going to be a Kindle store on its own? Is it going to be a limited selection? I'm not quite sure. I mean, Amazon's problem is they don't have storefronts to show Kindles, although they now have Kindles in Target stores and places like that. So
which Barnes & Noble has been doing.
That was the advantage Barnes & Noble had, is they could put the Nook out front in their brick-and-mortar stores.
And Amazon is doing Amazon-exclusive books now.
Right.
So they will have some books to sell. But, yeah, I gather it's e-readers and tablets. They want to launch a test store in Seattle, according to rumors, by the end of the year.
Yeah, why not try it?
Well, there's a good reason, for tax reasons, because you don't want to have a physical presence.
I'm starting to wonder. I mean, first off, they've got a presence in Washington, so they can test
Seattle.
It there. But if you look at what Amazon's been doing, like their settlement with the state of California,
right.
I feel like Amazon may be realizing that the jig
they're
is
gonna
up
have to do
in
it.
Terms of paying
yeah.
state taxes. Yeah,
they're going to have to do it. So the settlement with California said that they will eventually, like 2014,
they'll pay California's taxes unless the federal government does an internet tax that's flat, in which case they'll do that instead. But they basically agreed they will pay tax of some sort.
Well, that would be a good topic for conversation.
I really think that they've got a James Bond style threat room where they're trying to where they're figuring out that they're prevented from doing things like having more depots and more operation centers in certain states, because the more physical presence that they have, even if it's not a retail establishment, the greater their exposure is to having to pay state sales taxes. So my guess is that they already know which states where they're saying that, look, I know that we'll have a certain drop off if we have to collect state sales tax here, but we could actually expedite our deliveries by not having to route it through East Yahoo in order to deliver to our customers in the state. And then they would say, if we're going to basically say that we're resigned to the fact of having a presence that's large enough to demand state sales tax, let's at least see what we can do about finding some good high-profile space in one of these high-upscale malls where there's at least three storefronts that have been closed out for the past 6 or 8 months. Put some devices there and see if we get any traction. I don't see anything like the Apple Store, but it might be okay to do something like the Mont Blanc Store. You're in these malls, you're wondering, why is there an entire store devoted to pens and men's fragrances? But it's small. It needs to be only staffed by two people.
It gives
people sort of... Exactly. Well, not only that, but it's also an ad that they specifically control. It's a space where they control the vertical and the horizontal.
Right.
So I nothing like the Apple Store, but I wouldn't be surprised if they decided, as part of a longer-range strategy, it's okay for us to open up 10 stores in this state and see what happens.
Apple has apparently been talking about... remember they used to do this before there were Apple stores in CompUSA. They used to have Apple little mini stores.
Yeah, the store within a store.
They want to do that again, apparently, in big box stores. They're talking to, I think, Costco about doing that. I think stick with the store you control. Or are so many computers sold in the big box stores that they have to? They took the iPods out.
Right. Well, they didn't want to sell them. They didn't want to give them to Costco so they could sell them cheaper. So
right.
Costco
they didn't want
cost
cutting. Yeah.
That is interesting. Costco was, I think, the one store that Apple actually did a clearance deal with, wasn't it? Years ago, when they decided that the early PowerBooks were a bad idea, I think Costco was the only big box store where you're able to actually swoop down and get like an early PowerBook for next to nothing. So not that would have been like what 15, 20 years ago. So it's not quite operative, but it's interesting that they'd be going down to Costco. I think the other thing is that Costco, of all the big box stores, is the one that usually scores high on the list for customer service and how well they treat their employees. So they promote a lot from within their own ranks. They have a long retention rate for their employees. So if you're going to choose a big box store, you don't want disgruntled teens who wonder why they're accepting 75 cents an hour above minimum wage.
Now somebody's saying it's Sam's Club, not Costco.
Oh, okay. Okay. There are parts of the country where Apple stores can't reach, and even though the Apple store is incredibly successful, there are limits, and I'm sure they do the calculations and figure there's some areas that they can't serve. And
if they do Sam's Club, can Walmart be far behind? The same company, right?
Right.
And then they already do Best Buy, right? And they're going to do Target, they announced couple of weeks ago. So, that's what it is. It's just places that they don't want an open Apple store, but they want to have a presence.
Right, and they have shown that... people seeing their products in person has a lot of power.
Huge.
And
Huge.
That would be, to go back to Amazon, that would be the real reason to have that mall store, is to say, here's what the Kindle is like and look how awesome it is and don't you want one for all those people who've never seen an e-reader before and don't get it.
Well, and that's why Apple did the stores, right? They wanted to control how their product was presented. Yeah. And I'm sure Amazon feels the same way.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's hard to remember exactly how badly Apple products were presented in retail stores, like in places like Sears and other stores like that, before they had their own stores. It was traditional that you walk into the store and every Apple screen would be black, dark. And the only things that were up and running were the Windows machines, not because the Windows machines were more reliable, God no, but because the employees they didn't use Macs, they didn't care about Macs, and it was easier for them to upsell Windows machines. They're getting a better spiff on for each sale than Macs. there's a kind of a problem like that with Walmart too, because they already have iPads and other devices. They have these they have them in these sealed in, like hermetically sealed Michael Jackson hyperbaric boxes. But even so, it seems as though you're as likely as not as to walk past there and see black screens instead than seeing active, nice, come and touch and fondle this device demos.
Right.
So.
A lot of these store within a stores, I believe there are Apple employees manning them. So it's not even the store employees. They're just using the store space.
Yeah.
They
did
that. CompUSA, that was what they did.
They got the logos on.
Yeah, it was fun because I'd run into people at CompUSA who worked for Apple.
Yeah.
This is their beat. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Jason Snell, editor-in-chief of Macworld Magazine, is here. Anything you want to plug or anything? You doing any more Macworld cruises? Is that over?
Yeah, no, we're going to Australia this fall. Yeah.
Are you going?
Yeah, we're going.
Oh, yeah. Macmania 15.
Party
I'm going.
On Macmania.
Party on.
Absolutely.
That is going to be fun for our fans down under.
With an eclipse.
Yeah, you won't have to fly anywhere. We're leaving from Sydney on November 7th, 2012. We're going to Brisbane. I'll do meetups. You should join me.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do meetups in Brisbane and Sydney. And then we're going to go to New Caledonia. We're going to go to the Great Barrier Reef. And, yeah, in the middle of the ocean, the sun is going to go out. That's really nice of Captain Neil to arrange
that.
We hope
that it comes back.
I think he usually brings people from Scientific American for these things. So I wonder if this is a joint with Scientific American.
It's possible because they do
the eclipse cruises. Yeah. Anyway, if you want to do it, we'd love to have you. InsightCruises.com. Free plug.
But nice.
Since he's going to be there. Right. I'm sorry, Andy. Just don't cover your ears. Don't listen.
That's okay. I'd be freaked out by the toilet flushing down there.
I know. It goes the other way. Actually, we're going to investigate.
It doesn't. It's not true. Sorry.
We're
going to
have an investigation.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
All right. We'll test it out.
It'll be like Al Capone safe. I'll do a whole thing.
Yeah.
Next week on a very special twit. Does the toilet go the other way? Find out the truth. Investigative reporter.
People will really want to tune in for the toilet. That'll
maybe
be good.
Not.
Yeah.
Well,
this week in toilets, it's coming.
The fact that we have 30% of our audience is in Australia kind of eliminates the value of that research. They already know.
But those meetups are
actually, they don't know. You know why they don't know? Because they've never seen it go the other way. They don't know what the other way is.
The moon's upside down there, too. Did you know that?
Okay, but what direction does a rat hole spin?
No, I don't know. Look around you because we're in it. The show, and Andy Yanaka also here from the Chicago Sun-Times, which is that owned by the Tribune Corp, just out of curiosity? No.
No, as a matter of fact, we have new and very, very lively owners who are revitalizing, and the Sun-Times has always been doing pretty well, but now we've got new owners who are local businessmen, and so we're finally under the thumb of the guy who basically bought the magazine, bought the newspaper 20 years ago just to say, ooh, how much can we get for that desk chair?
Oh.
You're surrounded by people whose words go on dead trees.
I love. You know what? No, I don't mind. Especially
it's the two of us who are single-handedly keeping the soy business afloat.
Yes,
if you're a soy
farmer,
thank Canada.
We apologize for taking your trees.
Yeah, all the hardwood, all the old growth forests. Leveled.
Yeah, all the light. All the light that's now you're getting from you never used to see a sunset before in the middle of the forest. Now you see all the way to the horizon.
Let every flower grow. Yes.
I read a newspaper the other day, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great.
You know, I hate to say this, but yes, this morning I was doing all my reading on my iPad. I was at the library, and I was really, wow, what a wonderful experience it is to hold a magazine, like a physical printed. It's all together, the pictures. That's lovely. They should, Oh, wait. I grew up with magazines and comic books. Okay.
Oops.
Why is it so weird now?
It does. It feels archaic. Look, the page, you turn it, and there's something new. Ooh. So we're going to talk a little bit about... No, it will always... Don't worry, pages. Jason. There'll always be a place for Macworld Magazine. Always.
And it'll be on the iPad, probably, but that's okay.
That's not so bad.
I'm fine with that.
You could do worse.
Yeah.
You're kind of a natural for the iPad, actually.
Galaxy Note's a little small there.
Oh. Actually, I do read Macworld Magazine on the Galaxy Note. Is that weird?
Yes.
Because it's just...
It's
this is 1280 by 800. This is the same resolution as my Air. Anyway, moving right along, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to, actually it's not, my Air is a little bit different. It's 1366 by 768. So it's a little wider and a little shorter pixel wise. This show brought to you by GoToMyPC. See, not the right name for this crowd, even though it works. It should be called GoToMyMac.
Yes. Because
it works just as well on the Mac. What's cool about it is you can go to your Mac from a PC, and you go to your PC from a Mac. You can go to your Mac from an iPad. You can go to your Mac from an iPhone or an Android phone. You can access your office computer from anywhere you can get online. It is so cool. Their new iPhone app. Awesomeness. So here's a case study, a scenario, if you will. You're driving, you're going to the airport, and it's tight. You're driving, the traffic's bad. You know you're just going to make the plane, and then you go, "Gun, this happens to me all the time. I forgot the PowerPoint. I forgot the keynote. I forgot that document that I forgot the presentation." What do? You turn around, go back to the office? No, you're going to miss the plane. You call somebody at the office, say, "Can you eat this? Try that." "Okay, it's on my computer." "Yeah, I'll give you the password." No, what you do, this is great. You get to the airport, you log in with your iPhone, your computer at work, and you go, "Okay, you download it," and it's done. You can access your office computer anytime. It's like having it right in your pocket. Take care of last-minute requests from anywhere. Edit your keynotes or your PowerPoints. Update your spreadsheets. You can work on any file. You can send and receive email. It's just like you're at work, except you're not. You're accessing your office computer from anywhere. Go to my PC. They've got it for the iPad, the iPhone. They actually have it for Android phones. And, of course, of all your desktops as well. Sets up in minutes. No IT help is necessary. In fact, we're going to do a demonstration right now with your help. Go to the website, gotomypc.com. Click that try it free button and enter in the code MacBreak. 30 days free, unlimited use, free. So you'll see how quickly it sets up. And then download the iPad or the iPhone app and try it. You are going to love it. It's fast, it's easy, it's effective. Go to mypc.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. Secure, by the way, never been an exploit. Fast, there's nothing faster. It's just the best from Citrix. Go to mypc.com, offer code Mac. Break. Oh, yeah. Did you like Ferris Bueller, the Ferris Bueller knockoff they did for the Honda? That was good.
His slow transformation into Don Knotts continues.
Yes. You're talking about Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick, yes. Yeah.
This just in, Apple stock at a new all-time high. I'm not surprised after that amazing report, the quarterly report last week. They're up $5 today. Was there an announcement?
No.
They're up $5 today to $469.29. That is the highest they have been ever. Ever, ever, ever.
Doomed.
Doomed?
Doomed, beleaguered.
It's over?
Doomed. Oh.
It's over for Apple?
Long okay, they keep telling me, and the stock keeps going up.
It's
so
over?
I guess just, yeah.
Oh, no. This is...
It's
this
like
is,
people... What they say is they're like, well, it's so high now.
How could it get
really
any higher?
Nowhere for it to go but down. Actually, yeah. There is one other place it could go.
Up.
Up. Yeah.
Look at this. This is over a year.
Yeah.
Climbing. Wow. And I don't own tech stocks, and I know you don't either, Jason.
Yes. Not
we're not allowed to. I'm the boss. I'm allowed to, I guess, but just ethics preclude the idea that I might have an investment in any company we cover. But damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Profits, this is for all the talk of market share, and I know this gets beaten up a lot, but all the talk of market share, in the phone industry especially, the profit share. There was a story today about the iPhone taking last quarter some ridiculous percentage of the profits.
Maybe that's it. But we already knew.
It's just that shows you. It's amazing.
And there's bad news today. Like China might be fining Apple and banning the iPad because China says Apple abused the trademark. Now, that's just bizarre. So now now China decides to enforce trademark law.
Well, it had to happen. Apple seems to have a really good relationship with China, with the Chinese government, and has been successful in China. So I would imagine, and of course produces all of its stuff there. So I would imagine it'll all work out.
So apparently in 2006, Apple, kind of sneaky, because 2006, nobody thought they were going to make an iPad, via a subsidiary called the IP Application Development Corporation, purchased the name in China for iPad. I guess it's iPad. From, I don't know. Is that what it is in China? I don't know. They purchased whatever the name iPad is in China. I think it's iPad from a company, apparently ProView International Holdings in Hong Kong, owned it. The Chinese market rights to use the trademark. They only paid him $55,000.
So this is what happens when you're buying a domain is you don't want to go in saying, hey, I'm a rich money bag. I need your domain. And so instead, did they actually come up with a fake company
with
the initials IPAD just to buy it?
iPad. Wow, you caught it. I didn't even catch that.
Oh, yeah, IP application development. Oh, yeah, it's totally legit, yeah.
We just want the name because that's our initials. We don't have any intention of making a world-beating tablet device.
No.
Of reinventing computing and creating a post-PC era. Not us!
Wow.
We're just our founder, Mr. IP, told us.
Now, to me, you snooze, you lose, right? Yeah. But they sued. They sued Apple, and they said, we'll settle out of court. Just give us a little more, 55K. Come on, dudes. So they went to Shenzhen Intermediate People's Court over the trademark.
Judge Wapner is still there, I think.
Where's my gavel? This does sound like a joke. Over the trademarks iPad and iPad. They seem the same to me, but apparently.
They're pronounced differently.
Well, no, the I is capitalized in one and lowercase in the other. All right. They wanted 10 billion yuan, which is $1.5 billion.
Yeah.
You're already in trouble because you're going up against... they're already going up against a company that has $100 billion in cash.
Right.
In fact, you're also dealing with a government that is really does whatever the hell it wants, and you're trying to sue a company that's responsible for a great deal of Chinese income. Perhaps they'll get a couple of T-shirts out of the deal.
They say we sold it to IPAD, not Apple. Apple said ProView was in the wrong and it owns the trademark via a transfer.
Right.
And in fact, Apple countersued saying we want $645,000 or $634,000 in legal fees. The court is apparently, according to DailyTech.com, on the verge of ordering a $38 million fine to Apple. That's better than $1.5 billion. And apparently, this isn't the end of it. They're now filing lawsuits against ProView's filing lawsuits against retail partners who sell the iPad.
Right, all those counterfeit Apple stores are going to be sued now.
They also want a licensing. Yeah, right. Why? You know, it's so funny. China completely ignores intellectual property. Completely, trademark lockup means nothing. You go to Beijing in the basement of a major shopping mall. Every movie ever made, you can buy a beautiful, nicely made DVDs, completely illegal. But now they care.
Yeah.
I love that they got taken by this IPAD company. And now they're like, well, we could sue, right? Well, I guess, but they lost. They played the game and they lost.
Yeah.
It's very clever, though. I love
Welcome
that.
Welcome to IPAD. Capitalism, my friends. Welcome. You snooze, you lose. Finders, keepers, losers, weepers. See, that's the problem. In China, that they don't have that phrase. Finders, keepers, losers, weepers. Otherwise,
because they're not allowed to sleep. They're supposed to work.
Yeah. You could say that, and it would win automatically in court. Are you all head up about AT&T suddenly deciding that even though I have and you have, and I'm sure we all have, grandfathered in unlimited data plans, that you're a bandwidth hog if you go over 2 gigabytes? Are you getting email yet? From readers about this?
Yes, I've gotten emails from readers about this.
So have we.
That it's you're on the unlimited grandfathered in plan, and if you're in the top 5% of users, they say they're gonna throttle you.
Which sounds like you're being choked to death, but actually just means your bandwidth is being choked to death.
Depends on how much internet you use. They may send a guy to your house. Stop it. Cut it out.
Throttle you.
But otherwise, yeah, it's they want to kick everybody off. Already, you know, if you want to do tethering or anything like that, you've got to change to a modern plan. They want to get people off this unlimited plan because they figure that it's killing them. But they did promise to have an unlimited plan, and they kept people on it.
For most people, this is the only reason they didn't buy it. Well, I don't know. I'll speak for myself. It's the only reason I didn't buy a Verizon iPhone.
Is that your grandfathered on
the grandfathered unlimited. In on AT&T. I want to keep it. Because AT&T's bandwidth is terrible here in San Francisco and New York, but at least, and I, you know, if, okay, so here's the thing. If the next iPhone is an LTE phone on, well, I guess it could be on AT&T, but if you could get 4G on Verizon, it's so good.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they just lose customers in droves?
AT&T?
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Maybe not.
Depends on how quickly AT&T can roll out their 4G, their real for their LTE 4G.
And get off this, you know, throttling thing. So have anybody in the chat room, we have a fairly large chat room, are some of you, have some of you received those notes? I know I've received emails. You got it? Eileen got one.
Yeah, I'm still an AT&T user. I was grandfathered in, but I've been using my SIM card in my Galaxy S2. But
you're not even using it on iPhone.
I still got the text messages. I got one about 3 weeks ago, and then I got one this week.
Mm-hmm. So Magellan Tech said received the letter last month. Web 8916 and 6915 both have friends or have received it. I guess, you know, they're protecting their network, right? Is that the justification? It's unlimited, but don't use too much.
Yeah.
Fake unlimited. It's just unlimited is a hell of a thing. I mean, that is literally telling people that if you want to stream Netflix 8 hours a day at work, why bother turning it off? It's free. It doesn't cost you any more money. And that it's not so much a problem for the entire network as a problem for specific nodes in the network.
Right.
And I do think that AT&T's been generous with unlimited users so long as they're not really hysterically abusive up to this point. Because I myself and a lot of other people I've talked to have had problems where, for one reason or another, they for instance, on the iPad, they got we've been grandfathered in for unlimited data, and for like we, you know, got a new credit card and forgot to update this one account, it lapsed, and we got unlimited data turned off. Well, if you call AT&T, explain what happened, they will say, well, if we can't do this more than once, but this one time we will put you back on the unlimited data plan. But you know, thank you for using AT&T. So. I really think that this is a network load problem, but they could definitely handle this.
It's not their first choice to do this. In other words, but they have to.
I don't think so. This is another case where I really think the transparency would go a long, long way to getting people to. If all they have to do is simply say that yes, I know that if you're in the middle of Delaware, this is not an issue. But here are some numbers that we've got for certain incidents in which people just simply could not get the bandwidth they're supposed to get because there are 4 people out of 10,000 users accessing this node that were just keeping this on 24/7. So on an ongoing thing, we need to sort of at least have an issue for this.
I wonder how many unlimited customers are left. And I really wonder how much it may be that the ones who are left are the ones who are most likely to use all that bandwidth.
Of course they are.
So that's the
issue. Of course
they
are.
Yeah, but, it's sort of. It really is like a problem where we've got too many, you know, 78-year-old people who are hogging the best seats, like at the Dunkin' Donuts. It's like, you know what? The younger people aren't doing this. This is a problem that's going to solve itself. Wink, wink. If we simply are nice for another 2 or 3 years. I think it's the same reason why Jerry Lewis was allowed to continue to host the telethon as many years as he did, because I think that the organization thought we could either cause this big scene by firing him, or we could let nature take its course and fire him for us. I'm still using my iPad 1, chiefly because I didn't really see a need to upgrade the iPad 2. But at some point, I'm going to be buying a new iPad. I'm going to be probably in some sort of a circumstance in which I will have to make the decision between keeping old hardware and unlimited data, or switching to new hardware or a new carrier and being data capped. And it won't be much of a choice. I'll decide, well, I'd much rather have the new service or the new hardware and get rid of it. It's still a problem for me to try to decide whether or not I actually want to go for tethering on my iPhone for that reason, that I still, on a month-by-month basis, think that, well, I don't really need that. I don't really need tethering in that many places, so I'd much rather have the extra half a gigabyte that I seem to need every single month. But there's going to be a time in which I need to work in a space that has no Wi-Fi, in which case I'll say, okay, it was nice while it lasted. Goodbye. So maybe AT&T should just concentrate on letting the dinosaurs have their fun until they finally submerge into the tar pits.
And start laying more pipe. For the 4G.
I think we should all start laying more pipe. You know, I'm sorry. I'm a weak fan.
I set you up. I totally set you up.
You can't really
that was kind of mean.
Root for phone companies, can you?
No.
Or, like,
not
cable
allowed.
Companies
not
or,
allowed. No.
I mean,
no.
Yeah.
Dude, You're a barista. Apple snares top smartphone sales spot. Say that five.
Yeah,
good. That's a tongue twister, Macworld magazine.
Yeah, try it again.
Did your headline writer do that on purpose? Did Greg do that, or did you,
we
have a...
We did that to trip you up.
Apple snares top smartphone sales spot. Wow.
It's fine
Apple
as long
snares top smartphone
try it like
sales
Sylvester
spot.
The cat.
Apple snares top smartphone sales... Oh, God. I just got the mic all
I think
wet.
We may have broken the equipment.
Ouch.
Yeah, but this is that market share stuff, right? Which is just that 4S came out and Apple sold a lot of
which
phones.
Everybody, were you in the group that said, oh, the 4S is not that big a deal. It's not, it's the iPhone 4 with a few extra little. How could it possibly be so?
Well, there's two groups, right? There's the groups who are like, oh my God, the iPhone 5 is coming out and it's going to be like a floating thing. And
I'm going to weigh.
It'll weigh negative weight and it'll float and fly. And then there are the people who are like, well, there'll be a new iPhone. And if you look at Apple's past history, you'll see that generally they're on a two-year cycle and they do an incremental upgrade because most people are on two-year contracts.
It's a tick-tock.
And
so this is the tick and the talk is
and most
this
of the people
year.
Who would buy an iPhone 4S will be people who had a 3GS, not a 4. And so it's a big step up for them.
Right.
Yeah, because Apple knows most of their people are on these two-year
well,
contracts.
Well, that bodes well for this year then. Because there'll be another whole group of people who bought an iPhone 4.
Coming off their contract.
Off their contract. And from all reports, the iPhone 5 will be a significant modification. It won't look the same, right?
We'd assume.
One doesn't know, but...
I don't know. I read a lot of those iPhone 5 reports last year.
I know. So nothing. Nothing.
Who knows what they mean?
So,
but people, you know, yeah, some people were just freaking out that it was, oh, no, it's only faster and better, but not revolutionary.
It's Siri and the camera,
only,
right?
It's only faster and speaks processing. To you and does your bidding via spoken commands. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Well, I love Siri, but I got to admit that Siri's down a lot, right? Is it just me? Siri's often unresponsive to me.
Maybe she doesn't like you.
Maybe she doesn't.
There you go.
I made her call me gorgeous.
I'm not sure if I buy this. Go ahead. I'm not sure if I buy this every other year sort of thing, though, because by now I think that the customer base has become so fragmented that for the first couple of years, it was all the people who bought it in June as soon as it came out. Now you're buying it as soon as your old contract expired, or maybe you're holding on for another few months until you decide that an iPhone is the right one for you. And there's so many carriers internationally that I really think that the hardware comes out when Apple thinks it's ready to come out. I think for no other reason. It makes the things less predictable, but
I mean, I think in the long term, the two-year contract thing is silly because of so many things that are overseas that don't even have that now. But
it's archaic. Comes from a time when phones didn't evolve as fast.
But I do feel like from Apple's perspective, they have this kind of constant refinement thing where they don't want to overhaul the entire phone and make it look completely different every time. And so whether it's primarily driven by the two-year contract or not, there is definitely, you know, it's a trend. Now, they may completely blow it up and there'll be an iPhone 4S Q, or there'll be a 5 and a 6 and a 7 in successive years. Right. But it seems like they've happened on something here with the, you know, big change, smaller smart. Upgrade.
It's smart.
Big
and
change,
if, and
smaller
if you
upgrade.
And if the iPhone's 4S sold that well in 2011, get ready because Apple's results are going to be even more through the roof in 2012 because I think an iPhone 5 will be even more compelling. Right.
Although to Andy's point, they're selling a lot of phones that aren't those people waiting in line in those Samsung commercials.
Yeah,
right?
No.
Selling it throughout. But
absolutely. Yeah. And that's the point is that now it's a huge market. And that's why they are the top seller of smartphones last quarter. Samsung's still number one for 2011. But the last quarter was huge for Apple, obviously, if you saw their quarterly results. And having Verizon and Sprint in the game just helps. And I think watch out. Do you think it'll be next September? They'll do it September releases now?
Wow. Who knows? I don't know what I think anymore. Yeah.
I think they're waiting for LTE, the hardware, to become practical for the iPhone. I think that's going to be the next big step
up. I agree. They need to be 4G. I agree.
Yeah. The interesting thing to me, though, is that I really think that part of the trend for the iPhone market is now that the first couple of generations of users were real, not only Apple people in terms of people who are fans of the logo, but people who are fans of that kind of style, that kind of design, people whose needs were not being met by any other phone that was out there at the time. Now the marketplace, the community of iPhone users are just more civilians. You know, they're more normal people.
My point exactly.
Went to a store. It was time to get phone. But that also means that I don't think normal people look to buy a phone, replace their phone every year. They really do. Only when their contract expires do they become dimly aware that they can now get a new phone without having to pay any sort of an extra penalty for it. And even then, they'll think, it's working fine for me. The same 8 apps. I only really use 8 to 10 apps. They're working fine for me.
The one thing I would say about that is that these sales figures we saw for the iPhone 4S suggest that they may not know exactly when they're out of contract, but they know when there's a new phone that they want to buy. Because clearly, even though they might not have been waiting in line, Apple sold a huge number. It was a huge sales spike the first quarter that the 4S was available. So the availability of a new phone.
37 million phones.
Within the first 3 months, they sold a whole lot of them. So there were people who were waiting around or
somebody
checking to see that their contract was in or out of fashion so that they could just go and say, I want the new iPhone now, right? And so that is, there's something there, but it may not be tick, tick, tick. You know, yay, now I can get any phone and then I'll go to the store. It may be driven by the fact that there's a big phone announcement and that's what's selling those phones.
We spend too much time in court on this show, but we're going back to court. Motorola.
Gavel news now.
We're back in the gavel news. Motorola.
I was betting Iaz you wouldn't go for this.
I just think it's a great story. Why did Iaz?
Don't like to talk patents or.
I don't like to talk court cases. I don't like to talk patents. But you know what got me on this one? Motorola is suing, saying they want 2.25% of the revenue from iPhone sales worth $1 billion. That's what got me, is the number is so huge. I guess Motorola has a patent that iPhone infringes upon. Microsoft is doing quite well on Android phones, $5 on many Android phones.
Yeah.
Be an interesting way for... And Motorola, don't forget who owns Motorola.
I do.
The G word.
Yeah.
Google.
It's Mr. Google owns it.
Mr. Google.
I don't know why he's German, but he is.
Yeah, he sounds German. Herr Google. $1 billion.
Yeah. Boy, the patent stuff is really boring, but it's like high stakes poker with lawyers.
It's all there.
Lawyers.
No, you're right, Eileen.
Poker.
You're right. No, and normally I probably wouldn't say anything about it, but $1 billion. I love the sound of it. All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up, that iMessage bug. Apparently, Apple settled with one guy, but now an Apple Store employee says he's being spied on. Before we do that, though, let me talk a little bit about Gazelle.com. We all have gadgets, too many gadgets these days, it seems like. But we also have gadget lust. You want the next phone. You want the iPhone 5. What are you going to do? Well, and I have a drawer full of iPhones. I'm ashamed to admit. You forget this. Go to Gazelle and get some money for those to underwrite your habit. Gazelle.com. They will give you cash for your old gadgets and a good amount of money, too. Let's say you have a iPod Touch, one of the more recent ones here, let's say. And it's no noticeable flaws, working great. So this is what you do. It's not engraved. The battery works. I have the AC adapter and the cable. It's pretty straightforward. So they're going to $90. Thank you. I'll take it. Throw that in the box. Now, here's the beauty of this. It's going to go to their data specialist who will wipe the data, so you don't have to even think about that. Now, once I've got it in the box, I'm going to add some more to my box. Let's see, more stuff to sell. How about that Samsung Galaxy? Now, I no longer need it. I've replaced the Galaxy S2. Let's see what I have the 1777. I think that's the one I have. Let's search. Maybe you want the Skyrocket, right? You want the 4G, or you want to get the Note, or maybe you just want to get another iPhone because everybody should have more than one iPhone. You can make a vest out of them. Let's just see. I'm curious how much this is worth. Oh, I'll take it. Throw that in the box. Now they're gonna pay your shipping. By the way, if a gadget's worth more than $1, they'll pay the shipping for it and recycle it. And they do the recycling in a green fashion. So if it's worthless, you can still throw it in the box. They pay the postage, and you recycle that sucker, and it doesn't go in the landfill. It doesn't go overseas. You don't have to worry about it. It's a really good way to get rid of your old gadgets. Gazelle.com. You can get PayPal, check, an Amazon credit, a Walmart credit. Get the Amazon credit because you get 5% bonus over and above the offer. So I just what is in my like my I have now in my box. I have like $300 right in my box. So I'm going to get an additional $15 just because I'm using Amazon. You got to love that. Please remember when you just like a car when you drive it off the lot. Your gadgets are losing value every single day. Don't wait. Go to gazelle.com to get the best offer. Get that cash. The sooner you do it, the more money your gadgets are going to be worth. You can start funding your iPhone savings account for the next one or your next iPad, which will be even sooner. GAZELLE.com. Recycle the easy way and get cash to boot from Gazelle. So as long as we're talking about Apple TV, we were talking about
how about that Apple TV that's been talked about?
There is a rumor on Mac Rumors, appropriately. It comes from the Toronto Globe and Mail.
Canadian rumor.
Rogers and BCE both have an Apple TV, the new one, like a real TV, in their labs. According to the Globe and Mail, these two companies are beta testing such a thing. Siri is reportedly integrated into the new television to help you make programming choices. You can control the TV with your voice or hand gestures. Even an on-screen keyboard can be invoked without any special hardware. An on-screen keyboard, meanwhile, can be activated in a similar manner, allowing viewers to surf the web, conduct video chats, and use social media sites such as Twitter and Facebook, all without any physical interface. I don't know how that would happen.
It's magic.
Like this? How would that happen?
I don't know. What am I typing?
I don't get it. I have to say that this is remarkably similar to the Microsoft Kinect on an Xbox.
Right.
And this TV Samsung showed at CES with a camera on top with the gestures and the speech and all of that stuff. So it isn't anything that's not existing, but maybe it's an Apple TV. Maybe not. I don't know. Globe and Mail is a very reputable newspaper.
Yeah, but I'll say that's useless without context.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody's interested in the idea of a voice controlled TV. They're interested in a voice controlled TV that actually works.
Yeah, well, even more than that, it's got to have all the content on. I think ultimately control is going to be important, but also the content deal that Apple's makes, right?
Well, and what this suggests, if this story is true, so let's assume that it is. What it suggests is, a lot of people when they were talking about these rumors were saying, well, you know, it can't happen without partners, and we haven't heard anything about it, and therefore we know that it isn't real. Because whenever there's a leak, it's not from Apple, really. It's from the partners
right.
that Apple uses.
Right.
Well, here we are. It's not at all unreasonable that if Apple's whole idea here is to go out with the support of cable companies and maybe satellite companies, that they would have to work with them, and that would be where this would leak from. And this is what that is. So, you know, I think it's more realistic here that they're trying to make a TV that doesn't just kind of come out where they try to blow the cable companies out of the water. Maybe they've realized they can't do that, but they can work with some partners, sort of like what they did with AT&T and the iPhone to do it. You know, it's probably less good then, right? Because the cable companies will probably put all sorts of restrictions on it, but they may not have any other option if they want it to be functional. Or maybe it's just for Canada.
Yeah, but that's why it's...
Wouldn't that be fitting?
You're right in that this is one of the distant early warning markers you want to look for, that Apple's locked down pretty tight, but you would hear it first from a partner that they had got access to the device. Interesting. It would be interesting, though, that the first leak would come from Canada, not from the United States, because, you know, American cable companies pay their employees just as poorly as Canadian cable companies do. And so they're just as disincentivized to simply be the first person to say, hey, guess what I played with today? You know, the difference being the difference is just now they're doing it to someone named Gord instead of someone named Dave.
Right. Not all Canadians are named Gord. Just most.
Many of them are.
Many. My grandfather, my middle name is Gordon. So you can call me Gord if you would like. In fact, I wish you would. I've been dying for you to call me Gord. Apple modifies its EULA for iBooks. Says, it's okay. We don't own your stuff.
Right.
Is this another one of those, well, it kind of sounds like they own your stuff, but they don't really want to own your stuff. This is just to protect them so they can reproduce your stuff kind of thing? Or did they really want to own your stuff?
No, they never wanted.
They don't want to own your
stuff. No, the default of any lawyer is going to be to write it to be as broad as possible. And then there's screaming. And it's what's funny here is they've backed out of all the things except the one that was the most clearly what people were screaming about, which is this idea that any output from iBooks author in the iBooks format can only be sold on the iBooks store.
Can be given away anywhere, but it can only be sold.
Right.
Through Apple.
Which in my mind is just dumb because it's unnecessary. This is a custom format. And
it's not going to run anywhere else.
It won't, no. Right. But they did clarify it so that if you make a PDF out of what you did in iBooks Author or if you just have text in there, Apple's not asserting that they own the text or they own the PDF or anything like that.
Wow.
But it was necessary. People who've done books know that sometimes by the time like you have an agreement with a publisher and now the contract is going to the lawyers, it's the lawyer's job to make sure that, oh, wait a minute, are you saying that it's not 100% crystal clear that we can have the rights to publish this material? I'm sorry. Can you call Apple and have them like send you a signed affidavit saying that, no, I can't call Apple and tell them that to do that? So if they hadn't actually clarified that document, it would have made it really difficult to go forward with a lot of different publishing projects.
And it seems silly, but you know, we had this where we were talking with a print on demand company about some of our ebooks doing a print version.
It's fairly common.
And they had some terrible, you know, lots of this fine print, this legal text, actually, it's horrifying to hear this, but it like gets copied and pasted from other documents and they don't even know what's in it. And in this case, it was a print on demand company that was asserting that they owned all the rights to the content. They shared the rights with you, which, you know, if you read the fine print, what you're saying is if we happen to self-publish the great American novel that's going to, you know, be cited as the greatest 21st century novel in 50 years, and I accidentally did a few, you know, 100 copies on print on demand, whoever owns the rights to that long deceased company could go into court and say, look, you signed away the rights and we own it too and we're going to publish our own version of
it. So
I
think it's a legitimate thing to consider and it should be changed, and I'm glad Apple changed it. And this is the exact problem, which is you're going to have a lot of neophyte authors who don't know enough to look at these contracts. Somebody like John C. Dvorak, you better believe he's got somebody, and he's not going to do it if it's not in his interest. But most of the people who would be using iBooks might not have that eye for risk. So I think it is something that needs to be changed. I'm glad they changed it. Google, you know, we had the whole story about Google and Apple making deals not to recruit one another's employees. That's apparently over. Because Google has just hired Apple's senior director of product integrity for a secret project. VentureBeat said that Simon Prakash may even be working alongside Sergey Brin, the founder of Google, or under Motorola Mobility. Prakash was at Apple for 8 years, was responsible for product quality across the entire line from iPhones to Macs. Interesting. And now it's pure speculation that they'll be working on Google X's wearable heads-up display glasses.
I wonder where they got that. Google X, the secret. Yeah. Secret project.
Now remember, Apple makes up crap. We learned this last time, that the secret projects for new employees, just to see if they're going to tell anybody. And they don't let you work on a real project until they verify that you are not going to tell anybody. I bet you Google's doing the same thing. Yeah. Simon, you'll be working on Project X.
Besides which, I thought Project X was like involved a robot that drives a car.
It sounds like exactly
that drives itself.
You'd make up if you were going to tell somebody something that wasn't true, right? Project X, wearable headgear.
Yeah. It's a robot that wears X-ray specs and drives a car. Don't tell anybody.
I think it was the New York Times that first was speculating about this a year ago. And even at the time, I remember reading this and thinking that do you realize that this is an industry that people are willing to put plastic into their eyes every single morning? People are willing to have laser beams fired into their eyeballs, burning away tissue to avoid putting something on their face that looks like glasses.
Yeah.
And you're going to get people to voluntarily do that just to see more Google ads?
I'm going to wander around with a helmet. I like it.
Yeah.
Apple warns of crackdown on those who would manipulate their Apple Store rankings. They sent a reminder out to developers and said, when you promote your app, because apparently there are these services, I didn't know this, that you pay them money and they guarantee you'll get in the top 25 of free apps. They use bots and stuff.
Yeah.
To like
they get they they have these botnets that will automatically, it only works for free apps, of course, because they have these botnets that, and like hundreds, if not thousands of different iTunes accounts that will just automatically download these free apps and bring your rankings up. There are some botnets that supposedly will also use like stolen iTunes card numbers to drive up the rankings for actually like cheap paid apps too. And so someone was actually, it first came to light when a developer was posting to a forum saying that this company came, approached me and promised me that for $5,000, I could actually get an app in the top 10. And hey, I said, we got eight apps in there right now. And they told him which one they were. Yeah. And he did not take very nicely to that.
$5,000 they wanted.
Yeah, there's a link. I just pasted it in the chat room, actually, that for a story that Lex Friedman wrote for us. It's called the Towson Hack. And it's related because I think this is the source of people reporting that their iTunes credit is missing. And it seems to be buying in-app purchases that are small or individual apps. Oh. And it sounds like there's this whole darknet of iTunes manipulation going on that seems to all be about promoting apps so that they go up the charts so that more people see them, which then drives legitimate sales.
It doesn't surprise me because it's a huge and great value to be so high on that chart. Wherever there's this kind of money, there's going to be people trying to scam.
Yeah, so I think it's cool that Apple basically said, if you are somebody who is paying to have your app promoted using these guys, we're going to shut you down. We're not just going to shut down the guys running the botnet. We're going to shut you and your apps down. And that's good because it's what you end up with is really crappy apps. It's like all the people making the knockoff apps. They see a popular app, they make a really cheap knockoff with a similar name, put the name of the app in their description as something similar, and then they try to quickly make, a bunch of sales from it, and people get ripped off. So
apparently, the guy who was pitching this guy, the post is on Touch Arcade, the Touch Arcade forum, at Walter Kamen posting. He says, the guy who was trying to sell me this said, it's only $5,000. We've marked it down because Apple's on our tail. And we're going to give it to you for a special deal. Tiny Pets, they claimed Tiny Pets, Social Girl, Fluff Friends, Pet Town, Crime City, VIP Poker, Sweet Shop, and Top Girl, all free apps. Are all clients of theirs, and I have to admit, I don't know. These are not the apps that leap out at me as being the apps that I'm familiar with. Anyway, I think because of this forum post, Apple, which was just a couple of days ago, it was on February 5th, Apple has responded and said, "Don't do it. We'll get you." Did you download? There's a big 1.3 gigabytes for me update. For OS 10.
Yep.
Is it that big for everybody? Whew, it's huge. Yeah. Apparently breaking some PowerPC apps. I don't know why. Like
right on Snow Leopard,
Kill Rosetta?
Or it kills for some people with some apps, it kills Rosetta.
Right, because you can't run Quicken online anyway.
Right.
It needs Rosetta.
Right.
So it would have Lion to be. So it's on Snow Leopard.
Yeah, somebody was saying, where is the person in Rosetta quality assurance at Apple? And the answer is that person got laid off or something because Rosetta's gone.
He's working on Project X.
I think they just didn't even pay attention to it. I think Rosetta is so far in Apple's rearview mirror that they didn't even realize this was going to happen.
This is a big update and one you, I'm sure, want to download tons of security. Yeah, 1.34 gigabytes on this machine as well. Operating system fixes that improve stability.
It's so big because it's
security.
The combo update. There was a Delta update that just makes changes. And
what
it,
happened to that? They pulled it.
It broke stuff.
Right.
So they said, get rid of that. And now they replaced it with this combo, which is huge.
Scroll bars and push buttons get screwed up by an update.
Not good.
It's a bad sign.
Then oh dear, something went very wrong.
Yeah. The link that Apple provides for the security content of this update is apparently...
It's because they lost their director of product integrity. That's why. That's why this happened.
Apparently,
he's making sunglasses.
A non-existent page. Okay, maybe it's just me. I don't know. But that is a big. That is a big update. 10.7.3. But as always with security updates or updates of this kind, you got to do it. And I've done it now on a number of machines. Haven't had a problem. You haven't heard of any problems with it.
Now that everybody's got the combo update instead of the Delta.
Get the full combo update. Why do they call it the Towson Hack? Is it because of Towson, Maryland?
Yeah, a bunch of the early charges came from Towson, Maryland.
A little nervous. I just saw this in the chat room. We'll do one more story, then we'll get your picks and your tips and so forth. I am a big Path user. I'm sure many of you are also. Path is really cool. It is kind of Dave Morin's company. He left Facebook to start this. The idea of Path was you have a limited number of friends. Unlike Facebook, you're limited to 150 friends. And it's just beautiful on the iPhone. In fact, it won a Crunchy for the best designed app on the iPhone. Just really nice. According to a guy writing in Singapore, Arun Tampi, on his blog, which is McLovin. I like the name. MCLOV.IN. Path apparently uploads your entire contact list, including full names, emails, and phone numbers, to their servers.
Wasn't there some other app that did this and got in trouble too? I feel like I've seen this story before. That this is they upload your stuff because they want to let you connect with your friends.
Yeah, it's
and
part
all of that.
You know, and obviously and they they're really doing a server about, side.
Yeah,
as many apps do, they say, "Hey, would you like us to find other people using Path on in your contact list?" And you say yes. And instead of doing a client side, which might take a while, they just upload the whole thing and go through it. Okay, just let you know. It doesn't bother me.
I think disclosure and having a clear privacy policy are the issues, right? If they say that they're doing it, they let you choose not to, and they say we're not going to do anything with it and we'll throw it away, then it's not as big a deal.
But it's probably something anybody should be aware of when an app says, "How would you like me to find other friends?" And it says, "Give me your Facebook, Twitter, and credentials in your contact list."
And chances are that also means they have the ability to post right into your Twitter and Facebook.
That is always the case. When they ask for those permissions, look carefully on the permissions. It says, because it says this on Facebook, not only can it read your Facebook, but it's allowed to post as you.
And chances are it will.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Most of those, it'll be like, "I just installed this great app. Woo! You should install it, too." And it's automatically posted.
They should ask. There should be a checkbox. Well,
and Twitter, there's no privilege that says I want to read your tweets but not post them.
Right. That's the
Twitter
problem.
Doesn't even make it available.
The API is not available. Yeah. Well, what are they going to do? I like Path, and I think Dave is a great guy. I doubt very much that they're doing anything nefarious there. But
you just have to come out and be clear about
be aware
what
of
they're
it.
Doing.
Yeah, I'm sure that this just came out today, in fact, minutes ago, so I'm sure they'll have something to say about it. Let us take a break and come back with our tips and our picks of the week, but I'm going to start with a pick, because we're all three of us Audible users. I believe I'm correct in stating that. Audible.com. If you want to get a free book, go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month subscription. The first month's free. Your first book's free. You can cancel it anytime, so you pay nothing, but the book is yours to keep forever. I am listening to the new Stephen King, which I love, 11/22/63. It's wonderful. Craig Wasson, the narrator, does a great job with the accents and the voices. It's one of my favorite readers in a long time. And then the other one to listen to, because Game of Thrones is coming back.
Yes.
Season 2 will be The Clash of Kings. And it's my opinion you should read the book first. It actually helps you understand what the hell's going on in the TV show, because they compress so much. Even though they've got hours, you know, it's like 10 episodes. It's still heavily compressed, and I noticed this in the TV show. I had read the book, so it didn't confuse me, but I'm curious if somebody who hadn't read the books watched the TV show, if they understood, because it's going like this, boom, 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 and then the woman takes her clothes off, and then boom, 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 and then the woman takes her clothes off. So that's why I watched the TV show, because I'm just waiting for somebody to take their clothes off. But in the book, you can imagine it. That just did not come out right. Yeah. But had you read the book first?
No, I hadn't, and I watched the series, and I was constantly asking Tom
what the hell's
questions.
Going on.
Yeah. What is going on? Wait, what? Right.
So. I had to explain to my wife. I'd be like, okay, he's the brother of that guy. Yeah.
And anyway, the book is so good. I mean, it's not that anything wrong with the show. I love the show. But I am glad I had read the book first.
And I think Clash of Kings might be the best one.
Is it the best book?
The second book, I think, might be the best
I'm just
one.
Reading it now. Is it?
I think third one's pretty good, too.
It's good.
Can I skip the first one?
No.
I have to read the first
one. So you
one
need
still.
To. This is why you need Audible. See, okay, so now if you're going to read it, you got to find the time to read it somewhere you can hold a book. That means, you know, at home in the nice cozy chair and bed, fall asleep immediately. I'm guaranteeing you every time, three pages in, that's for me anyway, because I'm an old man. I need a giant screen. So I listen. The thing is, you're listening when you're driving, when you're at the gym, when there's blood coursing through your brain, so you actually stay awake while you're doing your gardening or housework. It's great. All those times that you couldn't hold a book, but you got to, you know, hours a day. And this is so awesome. And so if you're trying to catch up, Eileen and everybody else, the best way to do it, go to audible.com. And what a good deal. A Clash of Kings, which is the second book, so read the first one if you haven't read Game of Thrones, 37 hours. So you need to do this. But it's so good, and it draws you in, and you love it. And it's yours for free if you go to audible.com/MacBreak. Of course, it plays on every device you've got. And I have to say, I love the Audible app. I've been using that almost exclusively on the iPhone now. There's an Audible app for Android as well, but it's just great to listen to a book on Audible on the app. And they get badges. They've gamified it, which is kind of fun, too. The app has – the nice thing about the app, it has your entire – here's my stats. I'm only a newbie. I got to work on that. The app has your entire library. Every book you've ever purchased on Audible is always there, and that is so cool. You can go back and read any book you've ever listened to on Audible. They're all yours. By the way, 500-plus books in my library. So it's really like a library. It's everything is in here. It's wonderful. I just can't sell it enough. If you're not yet an Audible member, and I doubt there are very many of you who haven't become members, this is a great way to try it. Your first book's free at audible.com/MacBreak. Andy, what are you listening to? I get such good recommendations from you.
Actually, one that I for some reason I rarely get fiction on Audible because it's so hard for me to find something I like. I wound up actually getting Mrs. Pettigrew Lives for a Day because I saw like the last 10 minutes of it on the movie version of this on HBO and found out that the book, not only was I interested in the book because it's a really cool like 1920s, 1930s like novel, the kind that really nicely fun and consumable novel, but I also found out that this version was released to be timed with the release of the movie and it's narrated by Frances McDormand.
Oh, I love her.
Exactly. And this is another case of if my interest in the book, it's the content itself was, I don't know, 3 out of 5. Interest in the actual narrator reading this book was 5 out of 5. So it's good stuff. She doesn't use the Chief Marge voice from Fargo, but her natural voice is good enough.
Oh, sure, you betcha. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Oh, geez.
Audible.com/MacBreak. Now you see the problem. There's so many great things on here. It's hard to pick just one. Audible.com/MacBreak. Your first book's free. Do give it a try today. Normally, we would have Mr. Lindsay do an iOS tip, but he's not here. Do you want to give us a tip?
I have no tips.
All right. Andy, do you want to do a Lion tip or an iOS tip or an OS 10 tip? All yours, my friend.
I will give a quick iOS tip.
Good.
Actually, I'll give two tips. One because someone clever sent me a iOS tip. If you're using the split keyboard on the split keyboard on the iPad, I happen to have an iPad right here, which I already cooked in a 45-degree oven.
What, really?
No. I was not prepared to do an iOS tip, but I now realize that I'm actually doing one. There you go. Now, you probably already realized that there is... come on. Not used to using it. There you go. You already know that there is a way to split the keyboard, that if you hold your thumb on the keyboard button like that, a pop-up menu that will let you split it like that and turn it into two halves like so. A lot of people don't really like that so much because they don't like having to sort of... They don't like having to split the keyboard the way that iOS splits it. Like they expect on this side here, you've got it splits it between the T and the Y and the QWERTY row. However, what I did not know until someone pointed out to me is that Apple has actually included invisible keys for the keyboard, so that the key, if you touch directly to the left of the Y button on this left side, you will actually get the letter T.
Oh.
And if you tap directly to the right of the letter T, you will get the letter Y.
Oh.
And that's true for every single row of the keyboard. There is an invisible duplicate of the key that should be right next to it, right next to the virtual version of it.
That's
so
neat.
If your brain is simply saying that, oh, gee, if your brain is telling you that the T is supposed to be next to the Y, it doesn't matter. It will actually register for it. It just won't give you a visual cue that it's actually there. And so that's the iOS tip. I'm afraid that I was not prepared to do an iOS tip, so I'm sure that whoever sent this tip to me should be thanked, but I will not be thanking him or her because I can't remember your name.
Thank you, Mass Man, whoever you are.
There you go. Thank you, Mass Man.
Yes.
My iOS tip, however, my macOS tip was reminded of by Tidbits, their great Tidbits page. If you were ever curious to know some of the details about your Wi-Fi connection, if you actually just hold on the Option key while you click on the Wi-Fi menulet, it will not just give you a list of Wi-Fi hotspots. It will actually give you a detailed list of all the details about your connection to your current hotspot. So if you want to know what channel am I hooked up to, is this a secure connection or is it not a secure connection, what's my speed, all that kind of stuff, hold on the Option key, you'll get it.
It shows it in gray for the current one, but actually if you mouse over any of the others, it'll also give you the detailed data on the others.
That's for the
bonus
others.
Bonus tip.
Ooh.
Exactly. Even if you're not connected to this hotspot.
Oh, I have to hold down the Option key while I'm... Oh, no, there it is. See, it pops up. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So if you want to sort of shop around and figure out what other hotspot you might be able to use, like if you're on an open one, you want to use a secure one. Right.
These are all the neighbors. They're all too smart for me. Oh, there's a WEP. We can crack that.
Ha-ha.
Ha-ha. Very handy.
Well, you're not supposed to use it for that, because that's mean spirited.
I wouldn't do that. Cracking our bandwidth. We got more bandwidth than they do. I know, I'm worried. Thank you for two tips. And now, I do believe Jason has a pick for us.
Have a pick.
Yes, sir.
My pick is
the king of the Mac gems. You ought to have a pick.
This is an iPhone app. Sorry.
That's even better.
It's from AppCubby. It's called Launch Center. It's $2. Very clever utility to quickly launch things on your iPhone.
Oh.
It's got a flashlight toggle right there. You can set it to quickly call specific contacts at specific numbers. And any app that you have that has a URL scheme, which is, I know, a really nerdy thing, but it's actually...
Many do.
It'll list a bunch of apps, and it'll list the apps that it knows you have, and it lists the apps that it also supports in case you want to go get them. And you can do things like, say, open the Bluetooth window in the settings file, or open my direct messages in my Twitter client. And so you can do these kind of quick shortcuts to various parts of your iPhone.
Right.
That you might otherwise have to do multiple steps or have a bunch of different things on your home screen, and instead you just tap on Launch Center and then tap on any of the things you want to configure. Send an iMessage to a particular person. It's nice and it's new, so I think it's going to grow, and the guy at AppCubby is going to add a bunch more features. But it's a nice like quick access feature for your iPhone stuff.
Very cool. And is there a cost?
$2.
$2. Very good.
Well, $1.99 because Apple's in
Apple
your head.
Keeps the penny.
Apple knows that penny means something.
You keep that penny. I have a little button on my. This is always good for blinding people. I could. It's a flashlight button. I could brighter, brightest. Now you want to know the battery life now?
No need to shut it off, Leo. It'll just shut itself off.
Yeah.
When the battery dies.
In just a matter of minutes, the whole thing is dead. But you know, I do that. I actually, it's good to have that button because I often just turn on the face of it. It's not quite bright enough, and you've got the great LED flash on here. Might as well make it a flashlight. It's great. AppCubby.com Launch Center. And your pick of the week, Mr. Hinatko.
My pick of the week is from Tidbits Publishing. Probably one of the gutsiest selections, the most gutsy way to enter the app market ever. Adam Engst and Peter Lewis decided that they're sick and tired of waiting for Apple to create a macOS version of iBooks. Given that they're really into electronic publishing, given how important the EPUB format has been, and given how absolutely crummy they think that all the other macOS EPUB readers have been, they decided to build their own, something that's really, really designed to look as good as a macOS app could look. So they created an app called Bookle, working with another company. And it's a really cool EPUB reader because it's very library oriented. It doesn't have that really way cool bookshelf motif. It's more iTunes like, in which you have a column of the books that you have and allows you to easily navigate through them chapter by chapter, do searches, adjust the appearance of it, that sort of stuff. It's a very, very clean, very, very efficient app. It's also worthy of a recommendation because knowing the people who are involved with this, a strong 1.0 from these people indicates how awesome the 1.5 is going to be eventually. Mm-hmm. So I have to say that this version 1.0 is not really loaded with a lot of flashy treatments. There's not a lot of reflections and shadows in here. I would also put the more serious complaint that I think that they parse the EPUB in a very linear fashion. They don't really do anything to make it more readable. Like iBooks will adjust the line spacing, adjust like default paragraph styles to make it as pretty to read as possible. When you open an EPUB in Bookle in 1.0, it looks very much like, you know, HTML 1.2, 1.4. It's very mosaic. mosaic in appearance. But I'm sure they're going to be improving that as time goes by.
It doesn't do page breaks, which they could add. And of course, it doesn't support the DRM ebooks. But there are lots of non-DRM ebooks out there, too.
Right. But for now, I mean, as it is right now, I have a whole folder full of EPUB files that I've downloaded that it makes no sense that my default position is if I want to read these, even if I'm sitting at my desk, I have to move it onto my iPad or onto another device before I can actually read it. This is good for keeping all those documentation pieces, all of those public domain books that you've downloaded off the net, and you can actually read them on your desktop. It's especially good for reference books. Especially the way that it keeps them all collated together into a library. So I think it has a ways to go, but really good opening effort. It's $9.99, which is not dirt cheap, but as I said, produced by these people in this company, I'm really very much very confident that this is an investment in a really, really awesome 1.5 and an absolute kick butt 2.0. But I do say that this is one of the gutsiest moves that they could possibly make because there's just this ticking clock somewhere in Cupertino of this fully functional version of macOS iBooks that Apple is just waiting to release for the right sort of product launch, and so they might have to revamp the app if and when that app gets released. But the thing is, you need this app now, and who knows when Apple or if they're ever going to release a macOS version of iBooks. So. A hearty recommendation, and I'm wishing them the best of luck for this.
Yeah, when or if. I think they waited a long time figuring Apple would do this, and they never have. Yeah. And some of us think, well, why would you want to read a book on your Mac and not on your iPad or your iPhone? But the fact is, you know, every time we release an ebook, there's somebody who writes us an angry email saying, why can't I read this on my Mac?
How am I supposed to read this?
So there are people out there who want this, and it's great that they're doing it.
Does a Kindle app not read it?
No, it doesn't read EPUBs.
No, it's
Stanza. Anything like that?
Right, there's one open source app. Yeah, Stanza. No, not Stanza. Is it Caliber?
Yeah, Caliber.
We'll read it, but it's really ugly. Yeah.
Exactly. It really is like an X terminal app,
right?
converted into the. And also, you know, the Kindle app really does demonstrate the need for an app like this because I've got the Kindle Chrome plugin. And I'm surprised at how many times I've got like 20 minutes to kill while I'm waiting for a phone call. And I really want to continue reading a book that I started on my iPad a few days ago. And am I going to have to go get my iPad and sit at my desk holding my iPad? No, I may as well read it on the desktop. So I really hope this is the
first time. Apple does iBooks on the desktop? I mean, it's got to, right?
I don't know if they have to. I mean, Apple...
If you're going
to
do textbooks...
Yeah.
You would think, and yet they haven't done it yet. I'm surprised. I can understand why Tidbits took this path and said, look, they sell ebooks.
They have those Take Control series. They have tons of them, and I'm sure they get the same response that you guys get.
Yeah, why can't I read this? And you can do a PDF or something, but this is better to have something.
It really does feel like a labor of love because along with the release notes, Adam was saying that this is not going to change our publishing strategy. We're still going to publish our Take Control series as PDFs, but we felt as though we want this app to exist. We have the ability to get this app built. We're sick and tired of waiting. Presto.
Catsy Girl points out that there is an EPUB plugin for Firefox.
Right.
You could do it that way. That may not be a bad way. My pick is something that kind of surprises me, but I'm excited about. iMovie was pretty impressive when it came out on the iPad 2. $5 for video editing. And the iPad 2, turns out, touch is not a bad way to edit. Avid, which has long been a competitor on the PC side, and actually they've made Mac versions as well for Final Cut, now has Avid Studio for iPad, and you know what? It's great. Same price as iMovie,
And in my initial playing with it, I would say get it instead of iMovie. I don't know if you guys have reviewed it yet
or not. We did a first look, and that basically is it. It's great.
It does everything iMovie does. And
yeah.
So let me just show you. We'll do more of this on iPad today on Thursday. I've been kind of saving it. I was going to do a day in the life. You can shoot movies, of course, on your iPhone and then import using the little thing here or whatever. But you can also shoot them on the iPad. And truth is, I think the iPad camera for video is probably okay. It's not HD. You'll start by importing, creating a project and importing films into the project. It has the same kind of timeline that iMovie has, but it also has a storyboard mode. Here's all the clips, so you can look at individual clips. Then it has the timeline. Here's the soundtrack, multiple soundtracks as well. Great transitions, titling. Now, it's only got two. I'm thinking they're gonna have a store, an in-app store for additional transitions. I mean, these are the simple dissolves that you would want anyway. Most people shouldn't be using anything but cuts and dissolves. But I have a feeling there's a marketplace for that. Titling's pretty good, and they have motion titles. Something like, I'll show you this so we can go full screen and play it back. There does have to render. This is a motion title, so that it comes in and comes out, but they have other motion titles. It does have to render transitions, and okay, it's not the best movie ever. I'm working on the content side of it, but it does have some interesting, you know, little Philips like this. And the thing is, touch, it turns out, is really great. There's a zoom in clip editor so that it's easy to edit, you know, trim clips and so forth. I'm pretty impressed with it. I think this is a very nice first effort from Avid. And even at this point, brand new 1.0, I'd say if you're going to spend $4.99 on a video editor on the iPad, this is the one to get. I'm really impressed.
I really liked it too. And I think this is kind of a landmark app too, because I can't think of another app like this where the attitude wasn't that we're going to create a portable version of a desktop app, but we're going to take this popular task and we're going to articulate it in a way that specifically makes sense for a mobile touch user. This is an app that was designed by people who thought that if the only computer you have is an iPad, you want a kick butt film editor for it. And so here is your kick butt standalone film editor, where you are never expected to ever take this project back to the desktop. You can do it start to finish on your iPad, and why would you want to do it in any other way?
Right. Although I do believe it, you can export it out and use Avid Studio as well, so you aren't stuck. But you're right. I think that everything you need is actually in here.
It's not like the iOS version of iMovie, which is great, but clearly on that whiteboard when they're designing it, they're saying, well, we don't need to do this because if they want to do that, they'd have the desktop version for doing this.
Right. So it's really sweet. I mean, very nicely done. In fact, I would say it has most of the features of iMovie on the desktop, frankly. $4.99. It's from Avid. It is in the iTunes store right now. It's called the Avid Studio. And it is I'm glad to hear that you guys agree, because I only played with it for an hour or so, but I was impressed just with what I saw. And I'm actually looking forward to shooting some video and editing it.
It's nice to have them give Apple some competition and push Apple a little bit.
Absolutely.
Not just say, well, if it's an iPad app, Apple's going to do it, and we're not going
to
buy it.
I have to say kudos to Apple, which could say, oh, no, there's already an app. You don't get to do another app. I mean, they've been good about that lately, but they're a strong competitor to Apple on the desktop, and I think that it's brave of Apple to say, hey, okay, we'll take some competition on the tablet as well. I think the fastest way, I'd love to hear your tip on this, and maybe Andy's too, to get video out of the iPhone and into this is with the camera connection kit. You just take the USB cable, hook it up to the iPad, and then just copy it over. That's the fastest way. There are Wi-Fi apps that allow you to do that, but I think it's a little slower and less reliable.
It's definitely slow.
Okay. I thought that was the best, but now you got such a good camera in here. If you have a 4S, you can shoot great HD video.
Yeah. Although it's all 1080, so it's going to be huge. But yeah, it'll look great.
But it'll look great. And imagine, I mean, you've got in these two devices, you've got a very portable, easy to use film studio.
Yep.
Wow. All right. Hey, I'm so glad you could be here. Thank you. We love having you come in.
It's great.
I appreciate it. Jason Snell, Macworld Magazine, macworld.com. He's the editor in chief. That means the big honcho. And he is a great fella. Good to have you.
Aww.
Yeah. No, I love having you come in. And Andy, of course, we couldn't do this show without Andy Iannacco. He's the heart, the soul, and the sideburns of this program. And we're glad to have you and the entire Action League, or whatever the hell that is.
They're the Avengers. The Avengers.
The Avengers.
Well, now I say, are they the new Avengers? Or are they the secret Avengers? Or are they the
Avengers? To me, the Avengers will always be John Steed and Emma Peel. I don't get it. I'm sorry. I don't get it.
That is very true. That is a very nice little leotard.
Those are the cat suit, I think they call it. Andy Iannocco is at the Chicago Sun-Times. And, of course, his website, www.cwob.com. Thank you so much for being here. We do this show on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC at twit.tv. You can watch live. We love it if you watch live. But if you can't, don't forget, we always make audio and video available in a variety of formats on our website, twit.tv. In fact, the best thing to do would be pick the format you like, subscribe, and you'll get it every time. Not miss an episode. Alex Lindsay, wherever you are, we miss you. good. What country is he in today? He was in New York last week. He's still in New York.
No, right. I think Vegas, actually. Sorry.
He has been working his butt off. So he's been very, very busy with the Pixel Core. So he'll be back someday. Stay tuned. Coming up, our Twit Photo Show with Catherine Hall. And I'm very excited. Our photographer is our winner in the Twit Photo Guest Quest. A guy just out of college who does amazing pictures. Stay tuned for that. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time is over.